If I told you that the smartest, most successful real estate investors right now in 2025 are deliberately buying property in countries with crashing currencies or intentionally seeking out cities with incredibly strict rent control laws, you probably think they hate making money.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds totally counterintuitive on the surface, right? Because we're all conditioned to just look for the fastest growth and the highest immediate returns.
But you'd be completely wrong.
Totally wrong. Institutional money operates on a completely different set of physics than everyday retail investing.
And decoding those physics is basically our mission today. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Glad to be here.
So for today's discussion, we are pulling our insights from a really highly detailed 2025 guide. It's titled Global Real Estate: Top Cities and Strategies for 2025.
Which is a fantastic resource, by the way. Very comprehensive.
Oh, it's dense. But our goal here isn't just to hand you a list of the hottest cities and just send you on your way. We want to actually equip you with the analytical mindset of a global investor.
Yeah, because if you don't understand the underlying currents that are driving these shifts, you're essentially just throwing darts at a map.
Exactly. You want to know the mechanisms of how and why smart capital is moving around the world right now, ignoring borders and just completely redefining what location even means.
Right, because you might hit something good by accident with a dart, but you won't know why, and you certainly won't know how to protect it when the market turns.
Okay, let's unpack this, because before we get into the specific global hotspots that actually cracked the top five for 2025, we really have to establish the baseline.
We need to understand the anatomy of a booming market.
Right. We can't evaluate the winners without knowing the rules of the game. So our source material outlines this framework, basically five core traits that dictate whether a city is even considered investment worthy in the first place.
And the foundation of that framework is really the dual engine of real estate, which is reliable rental yields and capital appreciation.
Meaning the ongoing income plus the future gains.
Exactly. I mean, you need the ongoing income from strong tenant demand to cover your immediate costs, right? But you also really need the potential for the property's actual intrinsic value to increase over time. Cash flow keeps you alive, but appreciation is what actually builds wealth.
Makes sense. But those yields don't just exist in a vacuum. To me, evaluating a city feels a lot like evaluating a tech startup.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it.
Right. Because having incredible revenue, or in this case, high rental yield, is fantastic. But if the management team is totally chaotic or the regulations are constantly changing, it's a terrible bet.
Yeah, it falls apart.
Which brings us to the real linchpin of this whole equation, which is economic and regulatory stability.
That is the single most critical filter for global capital, bar none. Investors crave predictability. They are constantly looking for a stable political environment, consistent economic policies, and really a legal system that explicitly and transparently supports property ownership for international buyers.
Let me push back on that hierarchy for a second, though, just to play devil's
Just
advocate.
do for it.
Let's say you have a city that is just exploding as a massive new tech hub. Everyone wants to move there. Companies are relocating. The sheer volume of growth is off the charts. Doesn't that explosive demand automatically make it a great investment, even if the local government's policies are a bit unpredictable?
Well, what's fascinating here is that institutional investors will almost always walk away from that booming, chaotic market and choose a boring, highly predictable one instead.
Wait, really? They'd leave that kind of growth on the table.
Every time. Regulatory predictability actually trumps sheer growth, simply because risk destroys yields over the long term.
Oh, I see.
Imagine buying this beautiful asset in a booming city, but the local property rights are opaque. If the government suddenly changes foreign ownership laws or, someone can easily contest your deed because the records aren't digitized, your entire investment can just be frozen or vanish overnight.
Wow, yeah. So the legal frameworks that guarantee clear property rights are really the unsung heroes of real estate wealth.
Exactly. The foundation has to be rock solid before you build a skyscraper.
Right. And that makes the other factors so. The source mentions infrastructure, demographics, and global connectivity. It makes those much more effective.
Precisely. You need the smart city transit networks to drive up asset values. You need that growing population of young professionals to create tenant demand. And you need the airport hubs and digital infrastructure to ensure the market remains liquid and globally accessible.
So they all feed into each other.
Yeah, all five of those elements have to be working in concert. You can't have great infrastructure, but terrible property laws.
Right.
You can't have great laws, but a shrinking population. It's an ecosystem.
Okay, so armed with that analytical framework, let's actually look at the cities that have successfully engineered this ecosystem in 2025.
Let's do it.
The source highlights a top five list, and what stands out to me immediately is that these aren't just copy-pastes of each other. They serve distinctly different investor strategies.
Yeah, there is a huge variety here. Let's look at the high-velocity play first, which is Dubai in the UAE.
Dubai is fascinating because it's offering an estimated rental yield of 6 to 8%. Which is massive for a major global hub.
It really is. It's huge.
But beyond just the yield, Dubai seems to have kind of reverse engineered its entire legal system specifically to attract foreign capital. I mean, it's completely tax-free, and they've made international ownership incredibly frictionless.
Yeah, it's basically a masterclass in hitting that global connectivity pillar.
Oh.
They realized really early on that if they lowered the barrier to entry for international buyers and provided rock-solid regulatory stability, the capital would just flood in.
And it absolutely did.
Right. And you add in a rapidly growing expat population demanding high-end housing, and you have a very potent, fast-paced market.
But Dubai is pure velocity. What if an investor is looking for something with a bit more historical charm, you know, maybe a European foothold?
Right.
That pivots us beautifully to the second city, Lisbon, Portugal.
Lisbon. Yeah, Lisbon is offering an estimated 5 to 6% yield right now. But the mechanism driving Lisbon is entirely different than Dubai.
How's that?
It's really a combination of EU access and immense lifestyle appeal.
Yeah, the guide specifically notes its long-term appreciation potential because, despite its popularity lately, it remains highly affordable compared to a London or a Paris.
Exactly. It's leveraged tourism and programs like the Golden Visa to bring in foreign capital, which has fundamentally upgraded its infrastructure over the last decade.
So it's kind of the classic value play.
Definitely. You are buying into a mature European market at a discount, with incredibly strong fundamentals tied to quality of life.
Okay, now that covers the international plays, but domestic migration is its own beast entirely. And that's where Austin, USA, enters the top tier. Yields there are sitting at an estimated 4 to 6%.
Austin is perhaps the purest example of demographic shifts driving a market.
Just the sheer volume of people moving there.
Yeah, the sheer volume of domestic migration, specifically young professionals in the tech sector, has created this permanent pressure on the housing supply.
Right, so you combine that massive high-earning population influx with a very business-friendly, predictable U.S. legal framework, and your vacancy rates basically drop to zero.
It's incredibly stable from a demand perspective.
Now, the fourth city on the list is where I think we really need to pause because it requires some mental gymnastics to understand. Istanbul, Turkey.
Oh, a phenomenal market, offering a 6 to 7% estimated yield right now.
Right. So the yield is high, the entry cost is low, and it's a massive regional business hub connecting Europe and Asia. But the source explicitly highlights its currency play potential.
Yes, the currency play.
Now, I look at the volatility of the Turkish lira over the last few years, and a currency play sounds dangerously close to just gambling on forex markets to me.
Mm-hmm.
How does betting on a crashing or highly volatile currency fit into a stable, pillar-based investment strategy?
I love this topic. It's a brilliant question, and it's really where we separate the amateurs from the institutions. It's not gambling at all. It is a calculated arbitrage opportunity.
Okay, walk me through the mechanics of that. So, because I'm struggling to see it. How do you arbitrage a weak currency in real estate?
So when a country's currency dips significantly against a strong currency, like the US dollar or the euro, the physical real estate in that country effectively goes on a massive clearance sale for foreign investors.
Because your foreign money suddenly goes way further.
Exactly. Your purchasing power skyrockets.
Yeah.
Now, if you are buying a weak asset in a dying city, that's still incredibly risky no matter how cheap it is. But Istanbul has an enormous growing local population and vital geographical importance.
Oh, I see. So you are basically detaching the physical building from the temporary value of the local paper money.
That is exactly it. Real estate is an intrinsic hard asset. A luxury apartment overlooking the Bosphorus is going to be desirable regardless of what the lira happens to be doing today.
Because people will always need a place to live in a major hub.
Right. Over a long enough time horizon, a premium asset in a highly demanded location will hold its intrinsic value globally. So, sophisticated investors use the currency dip to acquire premium top-tier properties at a fraction of their global value.
It's almost like a hedge against inflation.
It is a hedge. They are trusting the long-term fundamentals of the city itself over the short-term noise of the currency market.
You are buying prime real estate at a massive discount, knowing the building isn't going anywhere. That is absolutely fascinating.
It's very smart capital allocation.
Okay, so if Istanbul is the aggressive arbitrage play, our fifth city is the ultimate defensive play, Berlin, Germany.
Yes. Berlin is the absolute definition of slow and steady.
Because the yields are the lowest on the entire list, right? Estimated at just 3 to 4%.
Correct.
And this is where I have to play devil's advocate again for you listening right now.
Yeah.
If you can get a 5% return on a completely liquid, zero-risk, high-yield savings account at your local bank, locking up your capital in a Berlin apartment for a 3% yield sounds completely absurd.
I completely understand why you'd say that.
Why would anyone take on the illiquidity of real estate for that kind of return, especially when Berlin is famous for its incredibly strict rent control laws? Usually, institutional money runs far away from rent caps because it artificially limits your upside.
Well, you're absolutely right that rent caps limit the upside. There's no denying that. But institutional investors are happily trading that yield for extreme, nearly bulletproof downside protection.
How does that work?
Because of those strict housing controls, tenant security in Berlin is exceptionally high. When tenants secure an apartment there, they literally never leave.
Oh, so your turnover costs and your vacancy rates are functionally zero.
Precisely. For a massive pension fund or a large institutional investor, a property in Berlin doesn't function like a speculative growth asset at all. It functions almost exactly like a government bond.
A physical government bond made of bricks.
Yeah, exactly. It is a highly predictable, incredibly secure place to park capital for long-term preservation. Plus, Berlin is a global leader in ESG standards, environmental, social, and governance, which makes these assets highly attractive to modern eco-conscious investment funds.
Which perfectly transitions us into the macro perspective, because these five cities, Dubai, Lisbon, Austin, Istanbul, Berlin, they aren't just operating in a vacuum.
No, not at all.
They're surfing on top of massive behavioral shifts. The guide outlines several mega trends that are completely rewiring how real estate works globally right now.
Yeah, we have to look at how people are actually living and working today. And the first major trend is remote work driving capital into secondary cities.
Because for decades, the traditional capital cities, and you know, the Londons, the New Yorks, they kind of held a monopoly on premium real estate.
They absolutely did.
Yeah.
But they simply become too expensive.
Yeah.
And digital infrastructure has totally severed the tie between your office location and your living room.
Right. The guide has this great analogy. It notes that investing in secondary lifestyle-focused cities is like finding that amazing indie band right before they go mainstream and start selling out stadiums.
That's a perfect way to put it. The value is high, the competition is lower, and the upside is massive.
Okay, so what's the next trend?
The second trend is exactly what we just touched on with Berlin, which is ESG and green building demand. And we really need to be clear here. Sustainability is no longer just a corporate buzzword used in marketing brochures.
Yeah, the source makes it extremely clear that it's becoming an enforceable legal standard.
It's a matter of basic risk mitigation now. Eco-conscious construction, green certifications, energy efficiency, these are becoming hard requirements from local governments.
What happens if an investor ignores that?
If an investor buys a building that isn't green or, you know, can't be easily retrofitted, they run the very real risk of holding a stranded asset.
Stranded meaning useless.
Basically. Meaning, in 5 years, you might not even be legally allowed to lease it out under new municipal climate laws. Sustainable development is how you future-proof the asset.
So it's not just about saving the planet, it's about saving your portfolio.
Exactly. And you combine that with the third trend, shifting demographics.
Right, the younger generation.
We have this growing population of young, mobile, career-driven adults who are intentionally choosing to rent for much longer periods than previous generations did.
They want high-quality, well-located housing with flexible lease terms, which keeps tenant demand permanently high in these specific hub cities.
They are fully embracing a nomadic, digitally connected lifestyle.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, because you might be listening to this breakdown and thinking, well, this all sounds great for a billionaire. Dubai yields and Berlin bonds are fascinating, but I don't have $10 million to buy a commercial building in Germany, and I'm certainly not going to fly to Istanbul to negotiate with a contractor.
Right. The barrier to entry used to be massive.
Exactly. And that brings us to the most disruptive trend of all, the tech revolution and global accessibility.
The technological leap we've seen recently goes so far beyond, like, virtual 3D property tours. We are talking about blockchain-backed transactions and the absolute explosion of fractional ownership platforms, like Azul Gamma, which our source specifically highlights.
Let's drill down into the mechanics of fractional ownership for a second, because this fundamentally changes the game for the listener.
It really does. If we look directly at how platforms like Azul Gamma operate, they are utilizing blockchain to turn traditional property deeds into immutable smart contracts.
So what does that actually mean in practice?
It means you no longer need a massive bank account, a 60-day escrow period, or a local notary to participate in global real estate.
Yeah.
You can buy a fraction, literally just a percentage of a prime asset in one of these global hotspots.
So you could literally be sitting on your couch with your laptop and put a little bit of capital into a high-yield villa in Dubai, and then take another slice and put it into a highly stable apartment block in Berlin.
Yes. You achieve global diversification instantly.
It completely democratizes the asset class.
It removes all the geographical and financial friction that historically locked everyday investors out of premium global markets. You get full transparency, instant liquidity in many cases, and you never, ever have to deal with a leaky roof or tenant complaints.
That level of access is incredible, but I feel like it also introduces a new danger.
How so?
When access becomes that easy, relying on internet hype or a trendy headline is exactly how everyday investors lose their shirts. Spotting these megatrends is great, but how do the professionals actually track this data without just guessing? What is in the institutional investor's toolkit?
Okay. Well, institutional real estate is entirely driven by data, not intuition. Our source outlines five critical tools that the smart money uses to separate the reality from the hype.
Let's categorize these. If we start with the macro, top-level view, we have the JLL Global Real Estate Transparency Index.
Right. This is the definitive diagnostic tool for that critical stability pillar we talked about earlier. Published every 2 years, it ranks markets based on how open, legally reliable, and data-rich they are.
So practically speaking, an institutional fund would use the JL index to avoid walking into a trap.
Exactly.
They might see a city with incredible projected growth, but if the JLL index flags that the city's property dispute laws are highly opaque or their transaction records aren't digitized, the fund will just walk away to avoid the legal risk.
Yep. Transparency equals lower risk. Now, if you want to gauge future pricing and market sentiment, you turn to the PwC Emerging Trends in Real Estate Guide and the Knight Frank Global Cities Index.
The PwC report is fascinating to me because it's heavily based on an actual investor survey.
It's a literal sentiment tracker.
It tells you which markets the heavy hitters currently view as overrated or underrated. And Knight Frank focuses heavily on capital appreciation trends in top-tier cities over time.
But those are massive, dense institutional reports. If you want micro real-time data, the source recommends Numbeo and local market dashboards.
I love Numbeo. It relies on live crowdsourced data, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right, so if I'm looking at a fractional investment in Lisbon and I want to know what the actual day-to-day cost of living is, what the local purchasing power looks like, or literally what a cup of coffee costs right now, I use Numbeo.
It's the quick pulse check you do over breakfast before you commit to reading a 200-page PwC report.
And the final tool is the ultimate insider tip-off, Regional Government and Investment Authority reports.
Oh, this is the secret sauce.
If you want to know where the next subway line is being built or which industrial zone is about to be rezoned for luxury residential, you read the local municipal plans.
Because that data literally maps out where the city is going to spend its billions, allowing you to position your capital ahead of the infrastructure wave.
Which is the perfect segue to the biggest infrastructure wave on the planet right now.
I think I know where you're going with this.
The source has a specific FAQ section addressing the absolute elephant in the room regarding global development. What about Saudi Arabia?
Right.
We constantly hear about these mind-bending mega projects, but why aren't cities like Riyadh or futuristic developments like Neom sitting at the top of the 2025 list?
Well, if we connect this to the bigger picture, it really comes down to the difference between an established yield phase and an unprecedented maturation phase.
Okay, unpack that for me.
The top five cities we discussed earlier are fully functional, currently yielding ecosystems. The Saudi initiatives, so Riyadh's expansion, Jeddah, Al Ula, and the Neo Mega Project, they are in the middle of a massive hyper-accelerated growth phase,
yeah,
driven by their Vision 2030 roadmap.
So they're essentially constructing the five pillars in real time.
Yes. They're heavily focused on integrating emerging tech from day one, pushing massive tourism infrastructure,
mm-hmm,
and aiming for totally unprecedented sustainability standards.
But they aren't yielding yet.
Right. They aren't in the top five list for immediate rental yields yet because the sheer scale of the infrastructure is still being built. But make no mistake, those data tools we just discussed, Knight Frank and JLL, are intensely monitoring their trajectory.
So they are the ultimate watch the space markets for long-term capital.
Without a doubt.
Wow. We have covered a massive amount of territory today. We started by defining the actual anatomy of a successful market, understanding that regulatory stability and legal frameworks are just as important, if not more so, than sheer rental yields.
So true.
We analyzed the diverse strategies across the top five hotspots. From Dubai's frictionless velocity to Istanbul's currency arbitrage to Berlin's ironclad bond-like security.
And we look at the mega trends like ESG and demographic shifts that are forcing all these markets to evolve.
And finally, we explored how fractional ownership platforms and deep data tools have democratized this entire landscape for everyday people.
It's a whole new world.
So what does this all mean for you?
Well, I think the source material ultimately points toward a genuinely mind-bending paradigm shift for us to consider. I mean, for centuries, the absolute golden rule of real estate was location, location, location.
Right.
But implicitly, that phrase always meant your physical proximity to the asset. You bought the brick and mortar in the community where you actually lived and worked.
You had a physical stake in the geography around you.
Exactly. But look at where we are headed now. In a world defined by blockchain smart contracts, fractional ownership platforms, and remote digital nomads. What happens to the global economy, and even local governance, when location becomes completely detached from geography?
That is a wild thought.
Think about it. If 1,000 everyday investors sitting in Tokyo, London, and New York collectively own a significant fraction of a thriving residential neighborhood in Austin, Texas, do those digital fractional owners eventually start demanding voting rights on local zoning laws or school board policies?
Wow. We're moving from local property ownership to what is essentially metacity governance. It means those invisible ocean currents we talked about, the legal frameworks, the global connectivity, the tech platforms, they aren't just factors to consider anymore. They are the entire ocean. The physical building is just the terminal where the global capital docks for a while.
Spot on.
Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the future of global real estate. Keep your eyes on those currents, use the data, and we'll see you next time.